From Brisbane and Adelaide, Australia, this is episode 80 of The Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K experience. I'm Denith, and today we've got some very special guests joining us from South Australia. Please welcome Adam and Josh, the organisers of Uprising Adelaide. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hey, mate.
So, just over a week ago, a whole bunch of Brisbane lads, there's about 10 of the Normal Blokes guys, 11 of the Normal Blokes guys, that went down to Uprising Adelaide and, you know, being the ITC Championship event for the year, just before Australia Day on the long weekend, we had a ton of fun. It was a three-day open event of 8 rounds, and before that, there was a Masters event as well that some of us took part in, and me and Luke were streaming, and these guys ran an amazing event. So I wanted to get them on the show to talk the event. On the next episode, Luke is going to interview the podium winners of Uprising Adelaide Open, and you know, you'll hear them. But today I wanted to make it about the organizers, putting them a bit up on the show and telling everyone their story on the event and a bit of their history in the hobby. But guys, welcome. It's great to have you. How are you guys doing after the massive weekend you had last week?
To be honest, man, I'm probably still not recovered fully from it. Like, I still walk outside because everything's currently stored in my games room outside. So I walk outside and I'm just like, I walk into my games room and I'm like, yeah, nah. And I just close the door and I just walk back out. I'm like, I can't deal with that right now.
Is it like you've had a massive party and you just haven't cleaned up yet?
Yeah. I had to start doing some laser cutting because I got some terrain orders, and I had to start doing some laser cutting. So I had to clear like a walkway to my laser. It's bad.
Jeez. And Josh, you were saying you had a little bit of a lighter recovery after the tournament, hey?
Yeah. Yep. I fortunately managed to squeeze a few days off work. So I've been living my best life. So
yeah.
I've really been lazy.
Awesome.
Today's like my first productive day. I'm organizing a teams tournament later in the year, so I was trying to suss venues for that, which is hard work.
Yeah, nice. I can see a lot of states this year actually are pumping up team tournaments. We've got some in Queensland. The Vic guys are really pushing some team events, and it's awesome to hear you guys doing as well. And obviously WA love their team events, so yeah, it looks like that's the future, hey?
I think Josh McMillan's doing some in New South Wales as well. I saw. So it looks like it's kind of popping up everywhere.
That's awesome. But yeah, sick. Well, I guess, guys, we'll talk a bit about your history in the hobby. I'll start with Adam and then I'll jump to Josh. So Adam, tell us a bit about how you started in 40K and how it got to where you are now.
So 40K has been a long journey for me. I've been playing since I was 13. I got my first Catachan Battle Force for my 13th birthday. So it's been 21 years now. God, I'm old. So I played on and off, and like most people did, I took a few years off after like the end of high school and forgot about the hobby and just thought about boobs for a while. So after that, I was in my mid-20s. And I just had my first child, and I'd moved back to Adelaide, and I came back and I was like, oh, you know, what can I do? I need something to do. I'd just moved back after like 10 years away. So I needed to make some new friends and make some new acquaintances. So I started, I bought a Praetorian army off the internet, the most expensive army I've ever bought. It was like $4,000 for 150 dudes.
Oh my goodness.
Painted that terribly. And then when I started playing Tournament 40K 10 years ago, and I've pretty much been going hard at Tournament 40K ever since, really. There was a period where I was good. I lost to Walduck in the finals of an Oz Masters. That was like a very brief period. So now I suck. So, you know, those who can't do teach. So now I just run a mix.
Nah, mate, you're not bad. I still remember when you guys came up to Brisbane for ATC and you did the pairings against us in the Merc team. And
yep.
I still remember that my list for pairings, I had written on it, so everyone knew it was my list. So everyone knew it was a Death Watch going up. And then you were like, screw it, we need to go home. So you just paired the Orcs and the GSC into the Death Watch. And our team's like, okay, Denise's going to win a game. Okay.
Yeah, that was definitely not our best showing at ATC. I had gone out on the Friday night when we got there and had like a work function because we've got an office in Brisbane.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get home till 2 a.m. and we all went to practice matchups that night. So at 2 a.m. I was still very, very, very drunk and we were practicing matchups.
Yeah, oh, you came in and woke me up to try and practice matchups.
Yeah,
and he also brought a list. You weren't you playing? You were playing Tau until like a day before the event, and then just switched to like
a day before list submission because we had a tournament that weekend, and everyone had gone from not being able to kill 11 devilfish to being able to kill 11 devilfish in like a turn. So
yeah, fair enough. Yeah, and what about you, Josh? Tell us a bit about your life at 40K.
Sort of similar story. I started playing when I was like 13 or 14, like end of primary school. And then I was playing with a friend and he moved to Queensland, I think. And so he moved away and so I stopped playing. And then came back into it as an adult. Simon, the third event organizer, he has been a friend of mine for a number of years and he really likes fantasy, not Age of Sigmar fantasy. Don't get him started on that. So he invited me around to play like a little mini one-day tournament at his house with fantasy models, and I had a lot of fun doing that. I actually won the like super casual thing with them teaching me the rules, and I was like, right, I've got the bit. So I was like straight onto Gumtree, picked up another Tyranids army because I had Tyranids in Tau, and I gave both my armies away to like an ex-girlfriend's little brother because he was playing. And then, went back
that's
out.
That's so sad.
Yeah, such a bad choice. And so that was early 8th, and I've been playing, the last 3-ish years pretty competitively. Yeah,
nice, because you came up to Brisbane as well. Hey, you're on the Eldar Flyers, right, Josh?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, nice. And, sick. And I guess South Australia as a whole, because compared to both of your histories in the hobby, mine's pretty small, you know, it's only been about 4 or 5 years. But tell us a bit about how the South Australian scene has evolved while you guys were playing. I guess I'll start with Adam.
So when I moved back about 10 years ago, the scene was actually quite vibrant. We were running a couple of big tournaments. We had an event called Mechanicon and another one called Douthus that would pull 60 players at like peak. So it was they were decent sized events, and we'd get people from we had McGowan come down for Douthus. We had a lot of the Victorian guys come across because it's not too far across for them, so we were getting really good sized events. And that was like the back end of fifth ed. It was like really the peak of a lot of people call it the peak of competitive 40k, I guess. But then Grey Knights came into the mix and kind of killed it, where it would be like you'd go to an event and there'd be 70% Grey Knight armies because they were just obnoxiously good. Everything was just amazing about them and you couldn't kill them, so they were fantastic. So it was really, really strong then. Then 6th and 7th, being the proverbial shit shows that they were, really killed it. Like, we were down to a couple of years ago, so not too long before Josh started, or maybe just around when Josh started, like the end of 7th, early 8th, we were playing 12-man tournaments in someone's garage because that was the best we could do. Like, we couldn't get more than 12 people to an event. It was pretty atrocious. And at the time, the main people who were running tournaments had both stopped doing it. Ty Swan, who you may have met at Uprising, he came back from New South Wales. He was kind of our last tournament organizer, and then he moved across to New South Wales. And so there was this big void in the space. So I took it on board and started running a few little ones, and then it kind of grew from there. So over the last couple of years, there's been a boom to where we now sell out a 30-person event in about 6 hours. Is that right, Josh?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. And then I guess so I started early 8th, and my first event Adam was running was called Commissar's Cup, I think.
Comic Cup, yeah, it would have been Comic Cup.
And that was pretty good. I think there was like mid-20 there, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, that was like the first kind of recovery event we had. That was like, I think it was low 20s. That would have been like 22 or something.
Yeah, and then from there, like that was sort of like about a month, 6 weeks before Terracon, which is a major in Narracourt, which is sort of like a good hotspot for the Victorians and South Australians to meet sort of halfway. So I went to that by myself because I was new in the hobby and sort of, yeah, became friends with Adam and other people in the scene there and have just been going hard ever since, basically.
Oh, sick. That's really cool.
But,
and it's
yeah, like Adam's...
Sorry, you go.
Sorry, go on.
No, no, you're right.
I was going to say, like Adam said, you know, like we had that sort of, you know, mid-20s numbers, and then Adam started to run more and more events and doing like, you know, year-long series of events with, you know, the best scores from three events taking the prize. And I put my hand in the ring and ran one event, and then I run 40K leagues locally. Mm-hmm. So I just set up three or four pods of about eight people, and they play each other over about 3 months.
Yeah, nice.
Which one of is my... good because I can play in those.
Yeah, well, that's good as well because you don't just want to be running events all the time. One of my opponents at Adelaide, actually, Sam, the Ultramarines player, said he was playing one of your pods and he loved it. So that's awesome, man. And,
yeah.
And that's the kind of community stuff, I guess, that can help rebuild from low numbers and get a more solid player base in. So it's really cool to hear that you guys have done that. And, you know, obviously blowing up to such a massive event that you guys ran on the week on last weekend, that's awesome. I guess leading up to Uprising Adelaide, what prompted you guys to run such a big event?
CanCon.
Tell us a bit about that.
I have the utmost respect for the guys who have run CanCon over the last couple of years, and we have a standing offer to them to come to Uprising free of charge because they have done so much work at getting the event off the ground with the ITC championships, and they've gone through so much crap. Like, I can only guess at the amount of stupid rules questions and things like that they would have gotten over the last couple of years with 8th and then heading into 9th.
Trying to get people to paint their armies and, like, you know, show different detachments. So I remember giving them heaps of crap about that.
Like, the amount of crap that they've put up with is amazing. But what stands out is Josh and I, we both went down to CanCon last year. And the Uprising was born out of the fact that we played in, what was it, the 5th, 6th round, Josh?
Yeah, something like that.
Somewhere around there. So we walked up to our table and it was 8th then. And there was not a single piece of usable terrain on our table. And we were just like, Josh was playing GSC and I was playing like Trixie friggin' Marines. So I needed cover and so did he. And we were like, we can't play a game on this table. So we just walked around and found another table that had terrain on it. It still wasn't great, but it had terrain.
No, it still wasn't great.
Yeah. And so it was kind of Uprising was born at that table when we were standing there going, we've paid a lot of money to fly here and play games. And these guys have done a great job. Like it was still good fun, but the fact that we have to come to Australia's premier event and play on terrain that is ostensibly unplayable in the game is not really good enough. So we need to do something better. We need to be better. Australia needs to be better than this. Yeah. And that's where Uprising was born from. So
I've been to the last two CanCons and had a good time at both. And I think like Adam's saying, from our perspective locally, we've been running the events and we've been building the community, reinvesting the money that we're, you know, trickling out to buy more terrain, better mats, you know, really upgrading our own stuff progressively throughout 8th and into 9th. And so we come from like a meta where we have this really good usable terrain. I was playing GSC, I can't get shot, and then going to a table with like two ruins on it and just being like, oh, okay, this is going to be a hard game. Like it makes a big difference. So like the lists we took also weren't used to the state of the terrain, so we couldn't perform like we wanted to.
And
yeah, and I guess the other thing locally, because our scene's been growing, is we actually outgrew the gaming club. So there's sort of two gaming clubs, one north, one south, but they just haven't, like, they don't have the space for the amount of people and the tickets we're selling now. So we're sort of in this sort of growing phase where we, you know, got to the point where the terrain they had wasn't usable for 8th. So we had all our own terrain. We're bringing everything ourselves. Like, why are we going to the gaming club so we can't sell enough tickets to get everybody in there? So we're sort of just moving upward, and I guess this was sort of a good natural progression for us to challenge ourselves with a multi-day event and I guess fill the hole when we saw that CanCon wasn't running this year.
Yeah. And I guess for anyone listening, you know, I think everyone can resonate with the fact that we've all been to a big event that we expected to have, you know, solid amounts of terrain. And it's sometimes it's just unfeasible to get that amount of terrain on the tables for the people that are running it. But tell us a bit about your process, guys, because every single table that you guys had, it was like 50 tables plus, and you guys had excellent terrain. How did you do it?
Hard work.
So when did it start, Adam? When did it start?
So the terrain thing started about a year and a half ago. I bought a small like desktop laser cutter just to try and get into it a little bit. And I was making some little terrain for us because, again, the gaming clubs around here didn't have the best terrain for 8th edition. And buying tables and tables of tournament-ready terrain, even when you're getting like a TO discount from suppliers, is still ridiculously expensive. So it just worked out cheaper for me just to buy a laser cutter and cut some terrain than it would have been to put 20 tables down. So I bought this little desktop cutter, didn't really cut it and whatnot. So last year, during the midst of COVID, I upgraded to a much larger cutter and I started to cut tables of terrain for SA. So we cut, we had about 20 tables-ish. Prior to getting ready for Uprising. Then Josh, Simon and I had a sit down in September when we'd found out that CanCon wasn't going ahead. And we decided, because we'd already talked about the idea of running like a competitor event to CanCon down the track, something to kind of hold as a premium event. But the reality of it was we were probably not looking at that till 2022, 2023. But once we found out that CanCon wasn't going ahead this year, we took that as an opportunity to go, well, hey, let's fill the gap. We obviously knew that there was a lot of COVID risk and things like that going into it, but we did what we could to mitigate that. So at that time, we sat down and we had that talk in September. Basically, from September through till January, I was running my laser cutter 5 days a week, producing enough terrain to be able to cover all of those tables. And then in that last week, Josh and I had, 50 odd large line of sight blockers from a raw sheet of MDF to the painted product you saw on the table. So it was assembly, then spray paints, then airbrush, and then gluing bits and pieces. It was a whole process. Josh and I probably did, between us, about 50 hours in that last week, just getting that last push of
stuff.
And
that was sort of like, We were caught up on Monday to just do some stuff, and then we played a game. We were feeling pretty good about ourselves. We played a game, and then after the game, we just sat down to go through the spreadsheet. Adam can't use computers or phones, so he couldn't open the spreadsheet that I'd made.
We figured that out when we were trying to run the BCP app, Adam. We figured that out well and early in the event.
I don't know how he was the BCP guy. Anyway, so we sat down to just go over like final numbers after he stomped me with his list. And he's like, hang on, so the 550 pieces of terrain, 150 of those are crates. And I was like, yeah, like, I've posted what we've got. Like, I didn't think it was a secret. And he's like, we need more. So, yeah, that was like Monday night. And then we had to be ready by Thursday to start prepping the event. So Tuesday, Wednesday were busy days.
Wow.
without having our own laser cutter, it would have been, like, prohibitively impossible to put that much terrain on the table. And that's why I have the utmost respect and the utmost sympathy for the guys out of CanCon, because I can't imagine trying to equip 80 tables of terrain without having our own laser cutter. It was hard enough with our own laser cutter, let alone without it. Like, it would be ridiculously expensive. Like, you're talking $10,000+ worth of stuff to put on the table. It's just impossible.
I just remember, guys, as the Masters was wrapping up and you guys were unloading all the ruins, I've never seen that volume of terrain like there. I think it actually covered like 5 full tables were like packed with terrain. Like, there was no spare space on the table. It was like tessellated into each other. Like, I've never seen that many like elves and ruins before. So you guys, props to you. That's amazing work. And hey, at least it's going to be functional terrain for the edition for at least years to come, right? So it's awesome.
Exactly right. And the good thing about it is, as well, it's the way that we've designed it is it's really easy to do, because you just kind of make the base structure, you paint a bunch of stuff separately and then glue it on after you've painted the base structure, and it looks good because it's now contrasting colors. It doesn't require a great deal of work, and that's why it was really good for tournament standard terrain. Like, there's going to be people who have tables at home that, you know, are spectacular and look amazing, and they're all GW terrain and whatnot, and that's fine and that's great. But when you're looking at equipping 50 plus tables, it's just not feasible to do that stuff. So what we made was usable, looked good, and was realistic for the amount of terrain that we needed. As is, we're currently in the discussions of, like, we probably need to make another 30 tables at some point. So we're just going to, like, potter through it throughout the year. So I started making my dream tables today. So they're going to have, like, yellow, clear yellow floors. So they're going to be, like, cut out of clear yellow acrylic so that you can tell there's a level there because it's yellow, but you can see if there's something underneath it, so that if there's a stream camera on top, you can look down through it. So
yeah, that's really cool.
We're stealing that idea from Camilleri. He said that they were getting some done, so I'm going to steal that concept.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. And I guess, obviously, heaps of man hours before the event for the terrain. Now, you get to the event, you have to deal with idiots like me that are asking you great FAQ rules questions in the middle of the tournament. What were some of the challenges?
Moonstep just blew themselves up. Could they not be charged now?
Of course, mate. Rules is written. They can't be. Anyway, what were the challenges you guys faced during the event? You know, did stuff go wrong? How'd you manage it?
Josh, you can take that one away.
To be honest, I feel like it all ran pretty smoothly. We had such good positive feedback from people. People had rules questions at the table, and I guess your rules question in particular was, like, one of the more challenging ones, and you guys accepted that ruling pretty well, really. So I think we got some backlash. Like, we had people contacting us to tell us that we'd made the wrong decision on rules calls, and I guess that was something that, you know, on a large scale event, you're going to get more questions than you used to. And, you know, unfortunately, in our great game, it's all complex. Everything's got different wording. And we just have to look at it, make a review, and make a decision on what we think's reasonable. And maybe we lean to the wrong side sometimes, but, like, you know, at the end of the day, we're just trying to provide a good event and do our best. And I guess we're learning from the experience. So hopefully that's something we can take on board to be a bit more critical of some of the rules questions in future. But having said that, I don't think anything that was decided was, like, black and white, we made the wrong decision. So hopefully they're forgivable errors if they're errors.
Yeah, and it's always difficult, isn't it? Because you've got, you know, so many things to manage on the day, as well as being a TO, and then you've got such a short span of time to make the call. So it's definitely not an easy job. When you look at something like, you know, the LVO has, like, quite a big team of judges and stuff like that. So, like, if people have the resources, they can do that. But it's definitely tricky, and especially when you've got it's not just like a local game store tournament, is it? You've got communities from different parts of the country coming, and they might play the game a very slightly different way. And you've got to kind of amalgamate what's right in your view. So, yeah, I definitely see that as a pretty big challenge.
That was certainly one of the bigger challenges in regards to as well. Like, normally when you're running something like this, you would have had Nova, you would have had LVO, you would have had Adepticon that have run and made decisions on these rules. And so you can kind of go, well, you know, I can justify my rules decision, or I can look at what they've done, and I can kind of go from there. Those things haven't happened. So like, these rules decisions were literally like, hey guys, you need to make this decision, and you don't really have anywhere to look to find an answer to it. And look, I'll be the first to admit, we tend to lean rules as intended very far. We look at a rule and we go, is that dumb? If it's dumb, it probably shouldn't work that way. And that's certainly some feedback we're taking on board. I actually was chatting to Adam Solis, TFG Radio, one of the head judges at LVO, about things along those lines, being that this is going to be the ITC championships, like, how involved can we get with, like, their rules calls and judges and things like that. So there's definitely things in place that we can do to make that better for next year as the main point of feedback. As far as the 40K event go, logistically wise, obviously we had Simon on board, and he's an event manager by trade. That's what he does for a job. So he did so much of the heavy lifting as far as the event went with regards to food and beverage, organizing the air conditioning, all those
literal
kind of
heavy
things.
Lifting of the
literal
tabletop.
I was gonna say he did a lot of actual heavy lifting.
Yeah. And so like obviously the weather was a huge challenge. Like Adelaide's had no 40 degree days in like 6 months, and then the one of the two tournament days, or one of the three tournament days, of course, is the 40 degree day. So
you brought Canberra to Adelaide, mate.
We did everything we could to make it feel like a unique CanCon experience. We even lit the place on fire and had the smoke pumping in.
That was so funny on day three.
It was just, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, it's literally the worst timing that you could possibly expect. And in that hall on Sunday, when it was really warm, it wasn't pleasant, but it certainly wasn't like take your pants off, big head meme type weather. So we did what we could.
I think it was warm, but not hot, right?
Yeah. Well, it was certainly a challenge. So,
like, you guys had an incredible setup with your aircon, with your bar setup, with, you know, people walking around with drinks carts asking if you wanted to buy a drink and paying on the spot. Like, on the second day when you guys had, was it Smoky Pastures doing lunch? You like went around to the tables. Yeah. So like we literally did not have to move and stuff was brought to us. So it was such a great experience. And like while we're on this topic, hats off to Simon. I know he's not on the show today, but that man is like the nicest dude I've ever met, Simon Vickers. So it's cool. It's cool to see that, you know, you guys could run that sick event even with the Canberra weather that rocked up on the Monday. But yeah, guys, in terms of sorry, you go.
I was just gonna say, like, you know, you hear on podcasts and what, you know, like people talking about wars in Atlanta with the bar service and stuff, and we thought, you know, that's something we could do. And yeah, like Adam said, we had Simon on board on that side of things. And having the three of us as TOs was like exceptional. I think it was a really good decision. Like a lot of people were like, oh, you're not playing? Like I thought you were playing. But three of us, and we hired a bar staff person for a few hours on the Saturday and the Sunday, and that also took some pressure off us just to run the event. And I think we nailed it in terms of having enough people to make it run smoothly. I think if there was one less of us, it would have been a lot more challenging. And the division of labor as well, like having all three of us sort of with different experience, and I'm not really sure what my personal experience was. I don't know really what I brought to the team of three. it certainly seemed to work well with us as a little Power Ranger team going Voltron.
On the Warzone Atlanta comment as well. So the event itself was designed to kind of be a weird amalgamation of like Warzone Atlanta, LVO, and Nova. The idea with Masters was to run it as like a 16-man invitational, very similar to like the Nova Invitational. Obviously, with some COVID issues and dropouts and things like that, the event only ended up being 8 people. But running the Masters event alongside, like Masters has always struggled to attract the big names because of the fact that you're going to play in a 16-man tournament. It's like, and it's, you know, it's a whatever event. But when you're already going there for a 120-man tournament the next day and there's a significant prize on offer, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot more attractive. And at one point when we sent out the invitations for Masters initially, 13 of the 14 people who were the initial invitees, so the best of the states and then the best ranked overall, accepted the invite. So we were looking at probably the most competitive Oz Masters event ever. When those initial invites went out. And then obviously with that last little bit of tomfuckery with bloody the COVID stuff for Queensland, it threw that a little bit into the little bit of a spanner in the works there. But overall, the idea behind it was to kind of roll those three events into each other and put on something that hadn't really been seen before. And we didn't quite get there because of the COVID stuff. Like it had the New South Wales people been able to come as well, adding in another 25 people. That's another, we would have had the space because we could have moved the tables outwards more because we had so much space between those tables. We would have got an extra couple of air conditioners in. There would have been an extra $1,000, $1,500 into the prize pool. There would have been all this extra stuff that we could have been able to do. But we had to have that kind of parachute. And then with Queensland teeter-tottering for that last week and a half, we were at one point, we were all having that difficult discussion with our wives, and we're like, look, we're probably going to be about $4,000 in the red here. So, you know, look, it is what it is.
We were a really sad bunch of boys that 2 weeks before Adelaide, like, because we had pretty much the story from Queensland is the Friday before a team event, we got locked down. So yeah, like a four-man team event didn't happen. And like the Vics were literally at the airport ready to come to Queensland when the lockdown happened. So like that fell over, and then we're like, crap, what if we can't go to Adelaide? And then I think everything was good like 6 or 7 days before, and we were the happiest kids in the schoolyard. Like, we were so happy about that. And man,
we're so glad that you guys hung tight and came as well.
Yeah.
Because it was, it was a great event having, like, you know, the mix of people. And I don't think I met a bad bloke from Queensland. Like, it was just a great team of blokes.
You just had me picking on you with all the rules questions, mate.
Also, Brian beat my spirit animal, so, you know, I'm not too happy about that.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, with Masters as well, like you guys said, you know, me and Luke spent the day shoutcasting the Masters, something we've never done together at, you know, an external event before, and that was so much fun. On Out of War Down Under, you can see the games. There's some pretty hectic games at Masters, and then Adam definitely took the reins after us and streamed the event. So you saw some big games, and it was really the first time we tried doing multiple streams like that at a big singles event. And I think that's the future, isn't it, for I guess watching 40K?
Yeah, it really is. It's a real challenge though, like when you're getting the same people on the stream a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like potentially with the 3-day event, like the first day we ran, just whoever landed on those tables kind of landed there. Mm-hmm. I even maybe feel like that should be the way, like with the 3-day 8-round event, maybe even for round 4, maybe even round 5 as well, and then kind of put them on after that, just because of the fact that I'm pretty sure Morisoli and Liam played every game from round 3 on those tables. So, yeah.
But you also would have missed that matchup, right, between Morisoli and Hackett. Like, you know, that was round 4 or 5.
Yeah, okay, that's a valid point. I guess the other thing that I noticed particularly, and something that was called out on the stream, was being that it's 8 games and these guys are playing on these tables continuously, potentially the terrain needs to be adjusted. Obviously we had the challenges. We had a donated table from Brutal City, so we were committed to having that on the stream. But with the other tables, at least, they were taped down, but there's the potential that we could have just picked up another tabletop and swapped it out if they weren't taped down. So that's something that we can look at for the future as well. Like, we can potentially get better tables, like actual tables that hold the tabletops in a better way, so that they don't have to tape them down, and then we can kind of just lift a table in, lift a table out, and that way they can be swapped up. It doesn't need to be swapped up every round, but if you're playing 5 rounds on those top 3 tables, you probably want it swapped up at least, you know, once or twice during that period. So
yeah, for sure. And it's like, it's definitely something you don't think about. Like, if you're watching this tournament from home for 3 days straight for 9 rounds, you don't want to look at the same board for like 20 hours, right? Like, it'd be nice to mix it up. Yeah.
And it's obviously with the streaming, you can't just move the gear. Like, you can't just change to a different table because you've got the whole challenge of the gear and everything like that. So it's definitely something to take into consideration and something that we'll look at moving forward as well. So,
yeah. And I guess moving on, you guys mentioned you looked at stuff like the Warzone Atlanta as like a prestige tournament to get a bit of inspiration from. And you had some pretty cool bounties for the Open. Tell us a bit about them, because I really thought they were quite cool.
Bounties are something that we do in our events quite regularly. So we do like the winner. So I've been running over the last couple of years just like a series of events. So what was it, 2020, I ran 8 events, and over the course of the year, 6 of those were like a series of them. So the winner of event number 1 then carried a bounty into event number 2. If they went undefeated in event number 2, the bounty went up into event number 3, et cetera, et cetera. And it was really just a kind of a last minute addition to Uprising. As we were sitting down and kind of working out the prize support, we were like, let's chuck in something cool like this. And the bounties, it came exactly from Warzone Atlanta. Like I've heard them talk about it on the podcast before. So that was exactly where I got the original idea from the bounties from. And then we kind of threw it up and we're like, okay, let's chuck it one on everyone from every state and then throw one onto Liam because he won the Masters and things like that. So yeah. Next year there might be something along the lines of take down the podcasters or something like that and have all podcasters up on the board. So,
well, I lost my round one game, so that'll be an easy win for whoever I pair into. but yeah, like that's something that on the flight home, we were even thinking of doing for our events, like adding random stuff, like, you know, randomly select a player and the first person to kill this player's warlord or something, or like just have a little in-joke running around of, you know, the first person to make, I don't know, Liam Red gets a prize. but yeah, it's so cool.
Bad luck bounties is one we've done as well. We didn't do it uprising, but like, you know, first person roll triple one, or I won one event. I had a patriarch perils and die, and then a broodlord perils and die on consecutive turns. Like,
that's tragic.
Yeah, it was really sad.
Oh god, because see, like that kind of stuff, it's nice to, like, we have a lot of events up here in Brisbane that have a lot of lucky door prizes, and the aim behind that is to give something little back to the people that don't win the big awards, and it's just nice to spice that up a bit for everyone that attends the event. And it felt like the bounties was so achievable for so many people in some regard. Like, oh yeah, I can probably pip this player in this matchup, and it's kind of cool. So, I can probably do this and win this prize. So it's definitely something we want to look at. I thought it was really fun. Even doing something like, you know, putting a post up the week before and having suggestions for bounties, you know, stuff like that would be really sick. But yeah, hats off to you guys. It was awesome. And can I say before we, I guess, finish up properly that all of our guys and all Blokes guys thought it was one of the best events we've ever been to in terms of the conditions, you know, the prep, the terrain. Like, it was all just spectacular. And we're at a stage where after 2020, we all just needed a trip. And Adelaide provided for that so well. So thank you guys, you know, from the whole team. It was sick.
Thanks for coming.
Well, we enjoyed, like, all of the interactions we had with you guys were really positive. And thanks for coming down and helping out with the stream and whatnot as well, because obviously that's definitely a gap that we would have had if you guys hadn't really thrown your hands up to do it. Because when Queensland wasn't coming, we were like, oh, are we going to have a stream? Are we going to be able to do this? So having you guys come down and do that adds such an element to the event, and helping out with Masters stream and everything like that is so good.
It actually it was perfect, because Nick Standing from Mudwar Down Under couldn't go. And, you know, we had to take all this stream gear down. And me and Luke had all these flight points that we got back from events that we couldn't go to last year. So, like, sweet, we're going to, you know, get a ticket for free, essentially, with points. And then we looked at the cost of, like, an economy ticket versus a business class ticket, and it was only, like, 20% more. So we're like, fuck, yeah, let's ball out.
Points are great for that,
Let's ball out for a 2-hour, 45-minute flight in business class, which turned out to be not much different to economy. But the good thing about that was we got double the baggage space, and we needed every single kilogram to bring the stream gear down. So it worked out really well.
Nice.
But yeah, it was sick, and I had some great times just shoutcasting, so it was awesome. Now, lads, the future of the event, what's in the works? What are the plans?
Well, as I said, we've already started the concept of having to get 30 more tables of terrain, so as much as it makes all of us want to vomit in our mouth a little bit, that's certainly on the table, so that's over the course of this period. We've already started looking for a venue for next year, potential to go back to the same space. However, we also are mindful of potential expansion. We don't really know how, but we really want to tap into and activate WA. WA seems to be just like this secluded island of hundreds of 40K players that play in WA and don't play anywhere else. And it's like, we're the kind of perfect middle ground for them, because I can understand that they don't want to travel across to, you know, Queensland and Canberra and New South Wales all the time, because it's a long way. But a flight from there to here is half the time, half the cost. So it's not like flying to America for them. So we kind of need to tap into that and see what we can do as far as activating them for next year. Because if we can blow the doors off 160 next year, we'll be able to cover that easily. And if we handed out $4,500 of prize support this year with 100. Imagine what we can do next year when FLG is back on board and able to assist with the grand prize for the ITC championship. And then having another 60 players in the prize support, we're going to be having like 15th walk away with, you know, 100 buck vouchers. Like it's going to be something that we can actually strive towards offering some real prize support in. So that's where we want to head next year. The same event, but bigger and better, and two more air conditioners.
Yeah. Two more air conditioners and a smoke filter.
I think what Adam's saying is spot on. I guess the other thing to consider is we're going to have less infrastructural needs next year because we're set up for 60 tables, I think, now. So that's 120 people. We do need to do a bit more terrain for that, but we've got the tabletops, we've got the mats. And then I guess the hallmarks that we're looking for are air conditioning, because that's a major issue in tournaments in January. So we want to make sure the air conditioning is on point. We want to keep that bar service going, because I think that was fun for everybody. It was fun for me to go out and sell drinks, go out and sell raffle tickets, go out and sell people the like sponsored lunch. It was really cool that we could get Tom from Spooky Pastures to come down. He used to play for Australia for 40K and do his new hobby, which is barbecuing, and give everybody an amazing feed.
That will be I'm back already next year too.
That'll be back. I'm already chatting to some other friends who do like Korean barbecue about maybe doing a second like sponsored lunch. So we'll see where that goes.
That's so good.
And then what else? And I guess, the quality of like, you know, not only having density of terrain, but quality terrain. So in 2019 at TerraCon, I brought my terrain from home to help them because, again, it's a big event in a small city. Mm-hmm. And my terrain ended up being on the string. And it was just like, MDF stuff that I had primed black, put a little bit of gray on, and then like a dusting of like metallics, like one, so like three colors max on it. It does not look pretty. Nobody likes it. And I kept saying to Adam, you know, like this is terrain that's good enough to go on stream and you're not even letting me use this. Like I can put more paint on it. Don't worry about it. He's like, no. We're going to airbrush the windows on all of these buildings. We're going to add detail into all these buildings.
We're going to glue black and white tiles into the buildings.
Yeah. The black and white tiles. But you know, it's all these little things. He kept pushing me. And I think it really drove the quality of it up on the table. And hopefully that's something that people appreciated a little bit.
Yeah. Dude, it didn't feel like we were just playing on like 50 mass produced tables. It felt like we were playing on legit like terrain for like a stream table, essentially, for every table. Like it wasn't just a foam brick, right? Like it was actually nicely airbrushed and you had all the detail there and it looked awesome. So yeah, props to you guys. That's great work. And it's interesting
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it's interesting that you're able to do that for such a large number and keep that discipline up doing all the tables like that.
We had many jokes as we were like in my backyard spray painting in that last week. We had many jokes about the LGT. We were like,
"Yeah,
well, we could be the LGT here, boys, if it was raining right now." But luckily, I've got a large carport out the back, but it certainly would have definitely hampered the events. It was at one point we had like 5 drop tarps all over my large backyard. Josh at one station, one of the other guys at another station, me at another station. Spray painting. We went through like 200 and something odd cans of spray paint. It was pretty crazy. So that's all on the cards for next year. And we say we're going to do all of this work throughout the year. But the reality of it is we're probably going to leave it to the last minute because that's what we do when we're painting an army. We do the same thing. I will not paint my army for RatCon in April until it is the start of April. So that's what's on the cards for next year. But the event will be bigger and better and cooler, and everything will be as big as it can be. There is essentially no upward cap. We don't have to worry about competing with space with other events. We don't have to worry about selling out of tickets because of the other events are selling out of tickets. We don't have to worry about the issue of, do we have enough mats? Do we have enough tabletops? Do we have enough terrain? Because we can make it and build it and get it all. So there is no upward limit on this. And as much as I would love to say that next year we're going to hit 200, maybe that's 2 or 3 years down the track, because we're going to be running on the same weekend as TanCon, which is going to create some issues for quite a few people initially. But with LVO and where Denise, you were involved in the Nope and stuff. Do you hear where LVO is going to be? What casino?
No, I actually didn't. Did you guys?
Damn it. No, I was looking today, but I couldn't find it because I was working, so I couldn't see when they announced it. And I couldn't see it on the Nope page. So,
Well, we'll have 700 angry people commenting on this podcast, knowing what it is. So we'll know by tomorrow.
But yeah, once when the LVO falls, the ITC Championship unfortunately just has to fall at that same time, and yeah. Therefore it puts that awkwardness in place of CanCon and another major event running at the same time, but it is what it is, and we'll strive forward and do what we can to make people want to come because it's a great event, not just because lots of people go. So
yeah, and it'll be cool to see Australia band up and still do a strong event at that time for sure.
It'd be nice if we could do both, right? Like I'd love to go to CanCon as well as have Uprising, but yeah, unfortunately with the ITC champs, we're going to have to be firm on the date, and maybe later in the year in Canberra would be milder weather, which would be nice.
Yeah.
They already do WinterCon and whatnot over there as well, which ostensibly is great. It's at Epic and it's not 45 degrees and 100% humidity. Mm. So, and those guys, they run big events over there for that all the time. So all that kind of stuff, like hats off to them, but it's just that weather in that shed. Oof. I've been four times now and only once out of four times was the weather like mild enough to not die. The first time I went, it was literally 45 degrees and started raining in the afternoon. And I was just standing there at the table. I was playing Nurgle, so it was fitting, but I was just dripping with sweat. I was just like, ah.
Oh, geez. One other thing that we thought for next year is that we want to do like a WAG tour. So like for the wives and girlfriends.
Oh yes. Man, so this is awesome.
Organize like a Barossa day or something, you know. Or Adelaide Hills Day, like we've got wine regions up the wazoo out here, but you know, something fun for them to do. There's plenty of things to do in Adelaide. It doesn't get like the rep of other cities, but if you like your grog, it's there's fine places to go.
Well, I was definitely keen to bring Ramya down this year, but maybe next year we'll have to do a Barossa tour before or after.
So, oh, yeah, she can do one without uni right now. That's the way it goes.
So. But what if I want to go to Napier?
Well, you can just. I don't know. You can stay for an extra day. She can go on two. She can go on two. There you go.
The guys were laughing at me at the house because everyone was drinking beers and I'm having this nice wine that I found at some bottle-o. And I'm like, I'm in South Australia, like, guys. I'm having red wine.
Here's my Pinot Grigio.
Yeah. But hey, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really great to hear about the event. And I'm sure people who went or people who were keen to go, you know, were excited to hear how it all went. But anything that you guys want to plug or say before we finish up?
One thing I want to shout out as well is we got quite a bit of support from the local lads from Terracon, which is in Narracourt on the June long weekend, Queen's birthday. I don't know whether you guys... In Queen, do you guys have it in the June long weekend, or do you have?
I think we used to, but now it's another time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Terracon runs over that weekend. It's literally halfway between Adelaide and Melbourne. So it gets all the Adelaide guys, all the Melbourne guys. It's like a 100-man major in the middle of nowhere. And so they gave us a free entry for this year, and then also RatCon, which is in April in Ballarat, they gave us a free entry ticket as well. So those guys really got behind us and we're reciprocating. So we're giving out a free ticket to each of those guys for next year for Uprising as well. So moving forward, there's going to be this like reciprocal nature, and any events that are looking to kind of grow their attendance from interstate. So if one of the Queensland guys wants to reach out and do like a reciprocal thing, happy to do that as well, because that all of these things, like if someone comes to Uprising and they're from Queensland and they win a Terracon ticket, that benefits Terracon because this person from Queensland now has a free ticket and they're like, I might go. And then they talk to Denise and they're like, Denise, do you want to go to this major in the middle of nowhere? And Denise's like, I love 40K. I play everything. So yeah. Let's go. I'll come. So it all benefits everyone. So if we're all kind of working together and helping the community as a wider group, then that's going to be the best bet for everyone. So if anyone does want to reach out and do anything like that, we're more than happy to take it on board and get it pumped up for next year and offer free tickets and stuff like that, because essentially, you know, it doesn't cost us anything to help everybody out, and that can really grow the community and help us get back to where we were pre-COVID with people being able to travel. Well, not WA right now. They can stay where they are, but everywhere else.
Poor WA.
No, yeah. Not poor WA. They have been the worst human beings possible during COVID, and now they're finally feeling the effects of it. And it's just like,
sorry to all our WA listeners. Adam does not speak for the podcast. anything you want to finish on, Josh?
No, not really. Thank you guys for having us. I guess we just want to be a positive influence on the wider community and continue to grow other events and grow ourselves. And hopefully, we put on a good enough show that the word of mouth will be strong enough for next year to get people to come back rather than going to CanCon.
Yeah, man, it was honestly an amazing event. And, hey, thank you guys for taking a bit of time out of your evening to come on the show. For anyone listening, if you want to see a bit more of the content from Uprising Adelaide, the Art of War Down Under Twitch channel has a number of games streamed. But also, as always, if you like what you heard, give us a like on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes. We also have a Patreon at www.patreon.com/thenormalblokes to support the cost of the podcast. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. See you next time. Luke will be chatting to the podium winners of Uprising Adelaide. Have a good evening. See ya.